Well, good morning to you. As I'm getting my act together here, I want you to ponder a question. Would you consider yourself a patient individual? I just have to get some water. I have water here. No, this is not part of an act. I just forgot it. So Pastor Matt and his wife are off for a week, and they actually left and went to go vacation somewhere, so a very much needed break that they needed. And so Jeff and Lloyd and I are kind of manning the ship as he is gone. And if you remember last Sunday, Matt started a series in the Psalms. And I did not know this, as I'm going to be in the Psalms today. So I was glad to hear that he didn't preach on the one that I want to preach on today. But if you remember, he did talk about hope last week. And I thought that where I want to go this morning is follows on the heels, I think, of that very much. And so if you haven't noticed yet in the bulletin, I'm going to be in Psalm 130 this morning. And I'm entitling it, The Posture of the Believer. And I'll explain to you as the morning goes on what I mean by that. But would you consider yourself a patient individual? I won't ask you to respond to that one. You can think about it. But maybe you can respond to this question. What is it that is most difficult for you to wait for? What is it that is most difficult for you to wait for? So as you're thinking, let me just tell a little bit about my story. My wife and I had this conversation not too long ago. If those of you who know me know that I have a little bit of road rage issues. I have talked about that over the years, where I am a very impatient driver. So let me clarify something. I was a very impatient driver. In the last little while, and I don't exactly know why or how it's come about, but I have become a much more patient driver. So there's one time where it really hit me in the face. It was kind of funny. I live up on Promontory. I was going down Promontory Hill, and I wanted to get onto Vetter Road to head over to Garrison. So you know that Vetter Road from Promontory Road to the traffic circle is just a parking lot. So I'm behind somebody, and it's just going, and me being the smart guy that I am, I'm going to jump the queue. So I jump into where Dairy Queen is, and you snake through the parking lot there, and you kind of come up behind the bottle depot. And then I went back onto the traffic. Anyone want to guess how many cars I jumped in that queue? One. One car. And the funny part is, as I pull in front of him, I'm looking out of my rearview mirror, and the guy's doing this. And I just kind of laughed to myself, going, that's exactly. I don't know how much fuel I wasted in doing that. Almost ran over a cat. But I got one person ahead of me. And I have been working on that intentionally, because I realized in my hurriedness that extra 30 seconds or maybe a minute at the most that I'm going to be late at my destination because I have to wait for someone around that traffic circle is really not going to alter my life that much. And I've had to recognize that I'm a very impatient person, and I've been working on that. Anyone, what is that's most difficult for you to wait for? Anyone that shouted out? Any ideas? Give me a clue. I did. Thank you. Okay, yeah. People not doing the things you want them to do. Holidays is so difficult to wait for. punch the keyboard, and maybe we hit the screen, and maybe we kick the tower. Waiting is so difficult to do. Whether you're waiting in traffic, whether you're waiting in a doctor's office, in line at the grocery store, when you're on hold with your communications company, your place of work, waiting for that app to load. Another story, in Germany, the first time that we went to Germany, we went to a small grocery store, and this small grocery store still had the conveyor belt on the receiving line, right? So the whole counter couldn't have been more than this long. And so, you know, I'm there with my wife and my kids, and we're still being the tourist thing, and I had the armful of stuff. And so if the counter is this long, I just put my stuff right here. I just, you know, put it down, and we're still talking, and there was a gentleman behind us, and I didn't pay much attention to him. I just put it down, and we're still talking, trying to pull our German money, trying to figure it out. And all of a sudden, I feel this shove, and this German gentleman pushed me aside, muttering the whole time, pushed all my stuff to the front, and put his stuff right there. Impatience. It is so hard to wait. Just some numbers just for fun. Timex apparently put this out, and this must have been Timex in Europe. So this is what they tell us. On average, people spend 20 minutes a day waiting for a bus or a train. We spend 32 minutes whenever we go visit a doctor. We spend 28 minutes in security lines whenever we travel. We spend 21 minutes waiting for our significant other to get ready to go out. I think they're being generous. 13 hours annually waiting on hold for customer service. 38 hours a year waiting in traffic. Now that's got to be a Canadian statistic. Some of those of you who drive Highway Number 1 on a regular basis, how much time do we spend waiting? So what they say, this is, I don't know how they figured these numbers out, but human beings spend approximately 6 months of their lives waiting in line for things. That means 3 days a year you're queuing up. 43 days spent on automated customer service lines in full. That's kind of distressing, isn't it? We spend a lot of time waiting. What does it mean to wait? So in their wisdom, Cambridge Dictionary says this. Wait means to allow time to go by, especially while staying in one place without doing very much, until someone comes, or until something that you are expecting happens, or until you can do something. Wow, that's actually a pretty good definition of waiting. Allowing time to pass. It's still buffering. Psalm 130 is where we're going to be today. Psalm 130. Psalm 130 is part of what's called the Songs of Ascent. And Eugene Peterson writes a book called A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. And in that book, he goes through the Songs of Ascent. There are 15 songs in the Psalms of Ascent. And it's believed that the Hebrew Christian, the Hebrew believer, would make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem about three times a year for various important festivals. And it was believed that they would sing these 15 songs as they journeyed to Jerusalem. And because Jerusalem is actually a highest city in that area, so it would be 15 songs of ascent as you would go from your home place to Jerusalem. Other people say that there were 15 steps when you got to the temple, that there were 15 steps to get to the entry point. And so others believe that at every step, you would quote one of the songs. And Peterson calls these the Songs of Ascent, a long obedience in the same direction, or in another line, he says, it's a long apprenticeship in holiness. And I love the imagery of that. Because what he's talking about is that these songs of ascent, not only are you physically rising in feet, but there's obviously an ascent that happens in your soul, an ascent that happens in your holiness, in your maturity. And I love that line when he says it's a long apprenticeship in holiness. It's a metaphor. It's a life lived upward toward God, an existence that advanced from one level to another in developing maturity. And this path toward maturity, they suggest, is that the nation of Israel took over the years as they matured as a nation. But Peterson obviously goes on and talks more about is an individual journey. There's an individual journey of ascent toward holiness that we're all involved in. For example, it could be a journey of from fear to faith. It could be a journey of from bitterness to love, from despair to hope, from loneliness to community, from darkness to light, or from vulnerability to stability. And these songs of ascent help us in that process. And Psalm 130 is one of those songs. And Peterson, as he writes this book, talks about the difference between a tourist mentality and a pilgrim mentality. He says this: we assume that if something can be done at all, it can be done quickly and efficiently. Our attention spans have been conditioned by 30-second commercials. Religion in our time has been captured by the tourist mindset. Religion is understood as a visit to an attractive site to be made when we have the adequate leisure. He goes on to say that everyone is in a hurry. We're all impatient for results. We want someone to help us fill out the form that'll give us the instant credit in eternity. And I suggest to you that Psalm 130 is like the traffic light. It's kind of like the red light, the pause as you're journeying. Because if you look at where Psalm 130 sits, surely Jerusalem would be in view. Or if you believe it's been part of the 15 steps, you're almost at the top. You're almost there, and Psalm 130 is that call to wait. And so my title is actually borrowed from Charles Spurgeon. And Charles Spurgeon says, this psalm identifies the true posture of the believer. And I'll explain that as we go to it. Psalm 130. Let me read it. You can read it with me up. I think you can see that. Psalm 130. Out of the depths I cry to you, Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my mercy. If you, Lord, kept a record of sins, Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, so that we can with reverence serve you. I wait for the Lord. My whole being waits, and in his word I put my hope. I wait for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning. More than watchmen wait for the morning. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, for the Lord is unfailing love, and with him is full redemption. He himself will redeem Israel from her sins. Psalm 130 is a personal penitential psalm, they call it, and it's out of the depths is where it begins. And out of the depths is a metaphor. The psalmist is not in the deep waters as he is expressing himself, but that imagery right at the beginning brings to mind, who was it that was in the depths that cried out of the depths? What was his name? Shout him out. David, Jonah. Didn't Jonah cry from the depths of the well? So that metaphor kind of gives you that quick imagery of what it means. And that is accurate, because that's what it means to be out of the depths. He was deep in despair, deep in something like, well, imagine you were under the water. And the way that you are yearning for breath is kind of the setting of the psalm. Out of the depths. It means to be afflicted. It also refers to the depths of sin. And it can refer to personal mental difficulties. Out of the depths I cry to you, Lord. And unabashedly and unashamedly, the psalm starts saying, God, I need you. I'm in deep despair. I need you. Out of the depths, I cry to you. By setting the anguish out of the open and voicing it as a prayer, the psalm gives dignity to our suffering. It does not look on suffering as something slightly embarrassing that must be hushed up and locked in a closet somewhere, because that sort of thing shouldn't happen to good, upstanding Christians. And it doesn't treat it as a puzzle that must be explained, and therefore you turn it over to theologians or philosophers to work out some answer. Suffering is set squarely, openly, passionately before God. It is acknowledged and it is expressed. It is described and it is experienced. And it is part of our experience as well, is it not? Suffering is part of our journey. Verses 3 and 4 express the confidence. But if you, Lord, if you kept a record of sins, who could stand? Question's rhetorical. Nobody. Who could stand? It says, but with you there is forgiveness, so that we can, with reverence, serve you. There's a confidence here. There's a confidence. The psalmist has a relationship with his God, and he confidently can say, even if in my distress I see my sin for what it really is, you, God, are the one who can forgive. You, God, are the one, and that's who I'm hanging on to. But even at this point, he is still in the depths. Verses 5 and 6 is the testimony. It's called the testimony of the believer. I will wait for you. I will wait. My whole being waits, and in his word I have put my hope. I wait for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning. Last week, Pastor Matt talked about, you know, if you're far up north and that where the dawn, it's almost on the horizon, and then it falls away. So you're anticipating, you're watching, you're waiting, almost, oh, and it's not. I have never experienced that. I don't know what I would do if I would experience that. Some people, that's their reality. Verses 7 and 8 is exhortation. It was more than that. He says, Israel, put your hope in the Lord. Put your hope in the Lord, for he is the one who will deliver. I want to go back to verse 5 because I believe verse 5 is the axis of the psalm. I believe verse 5 is kind of where everything hinges. I will wait for the Lord. Are we patient individuals? How difficult is it to fulfill that simple line? I will wait for the Lord. My whole being waits for the Lord. What specifically is it the psalmist is waiting for? He's waiting for forgiveness. Hence the previous verse. It says, if you, Lord, kept a record of sins, but with you there's forgiveness, and what am I waiting for? I am waiting for that forgiveness. And this is where Spurgeon pulls out the line, I wait for the Lord, as the posture, the true posture of the Christian. He said this, I wait for the Lord is the most blessed posture of the believer. You have to pause and think about that for a minute. One of the things that's difficult for me to wait for is Amazon. I don't do a lot of shopping in malls, but I do a lot of shopping on Amazon. And some of you know that I'm a woodworker. I love working with tools and stuff. And I've done it twice in the last 6 months. I've ordered stuff that I couldn't wait for. It's little tools. They wouldn't excite you at all. But this thing called a spiral bit. It's really cool. It's got this little... Anyway. So you order it, and then you wait. And you come home after work, and oh, no package. And you come home after work. I ordered a compass for my kayak a couple years ago. And I waited, and I waited 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Now, in the technological world, that is an eternity. And in the process, you know, I phoned my credit card company and I'm complaining and I'm all this kind of stuff because I thought that I was frauded, and that's just the whole story. But you wait and you wait and you wait. We know this experience, don't we? You're waiting for something and you come home, but there's a lot of variables that are outside of my control. My waiting is dependent. Maybe they mailed it to the wrong address. How many times has that happened now? Maybe it did show up on my doorstep, but maybe somebody else took it from my doorstep. Maybe it fell off the back of the transport truck and it's sitting in some mud pile somewhere right now. There are so many variables. But verse 5, the psalmist says, I will wait for the Lord. My whole being waits in his word. I put my hope. There's this level of confidence here that is very, very important. Spurgeon goes on and talks about what that posture is like. The most, I will wait, is called a posture of faith. The soul is hanging in faith on God in Jesus Christ. Spurgeon says this, and again, I love some of his imagery. This posture of faith. My soul hangs upon the veracity of God to fulfill his promise, upon the power of God to help in difficulty, upon the wisdom of God to counsel, upon the omniscience of God to guide, upon the omnipresence of God to cheer with his presence. This becomes the test of belief and trust. Will I wait or not? Spurgeon talks about it's also the posture of dependency. And that's a difficult one. You see, if I didn't need the doctor, I wouldn't sit in his waiting room for 45 minutes. If I didn't need Rogers Communications help, I wouldn't wait online for 2 hours. Would you? The problem with waiting is you're dependent on someone or something else. I don't like that. Do you? A posture. I will wait for the Lord is a posture of faith. It's a posture of dependency. And clearly, it's a posture of prayer. He says it's the ability to bear with dignity, calmness, and submission to the afflictive dealings of your Heavenly Father. You see, if I'm waiting in the doctor's office, I can wait like this. We've seen it happen, right? We can wait every 3 minutes. Is he ready yet? Another 3 minutes. Like, what's taking him so long? Because it's all about me, right? That posture of prayer, when you're waiting, whatever it is that you are waiting for, what are you doing while you're waiting? It's a posture of prayer. This one's kind of redundant, but it is a posture of patience. The ability to just wait, the soul waiting on God, the waiting upon God. This one's tough. It's a posture of rest. Because we know that many of us, when we're waiting, resting is very difficult, isn't it? But there's also a posture of expectation in this. You see, we know that, you know, UPS can fail me. And I can order stuff from Amazon, and UPS is not infallible. They can fail me. Spurgeon says this, in all your waitings, remember two things. Let it not be so much the event which you wait for as the Lord of the event, the Lord in the event, and take care that you have a promise underneath you. I love the imagery of that. Because Spurgeon says there's a difference between waiting on God and waiting on UPS. Because waiting upon God, there's a promise that I am standing on. And that promise, as the psalmist says it, in his word, I put my hope. I can wait. I can wait with faith, dependency, prayer, patience, rest, expectation, because the promise of the one who delivers. I can wait on God. And I can wait upon God. Where do we go with this? I read this in a blog a little while ago where someone says that patience is about place and pace. They said patience is about being in God's place and moving at his pace. And as I thought about that, I go, it sounds beautiful. I mean, I loved it, but I go, how on earth is that practical? We understand waiting in God's place. our men's group 2 years ago, as part of this journey, we explored some of the spiritual disciplines. And when I thought of that again, when you think of the disciplines of meditation, the discipline of prayer, the discipline of silence, the discipline of solitude, those are ways of waiting on God in place, remaining in the Word. But waiting for God in terms of pace, going at God's pace, that is a tough one. You know the story of Esau and how he gave up his birthright? And we often look at that and go, man, that is so foolish. And if you follow Esau's story, we know in Hebrews, that kind of gives like the epitaph to his story. In Hebrews, it says that even though he was so sorry he did what he did, and with crying and tears, he could not regain what he lost. And we can look at a story of Esau and go, now there's a foolish, foolish decision. He clearly ran ahead of God. I'm Abraham. You know Abraham's story? Abraham went going, not knowing. And at the beginning of Abraham's journey, everywhere he went, what was the first thing he did? He built an altar. He always built an altar. But even Abraham ran ahead of God. Remember that? And there are times when he couldn't wait. I mean, think of it. He waited over 25 years from when God first said, Abraham, out of you is going to become some descendants, to when his wife became pregnant. It was at least 25 years. That's a long time in waiting. I wouldn't give Amazon that much time. That's a long time in waiting. And in there, you know that Abraham ran ahead of God and got himself into trouble. Wait upon the Lord. I will wait for the Lord. My whole being waits for the Lord. Where are you in your waiting upon the Lord? In your financial dealings, how are you waiting upon the Lord? How are you remaining at His place and going at His pace? In your choices that affect your time commitments, how are you waiting on the Lord? How quickly our frustration escalates, especially when I'm behind the wheel and I'm trying to enter a traffic circle and that person in front of me doesn't know what they're doing. How am I waiting? I've done some awful things. I won't tell you what I've done as a driver. This is terrible. Back in my young, ignorant days last year. The effort spent on key relationships. How are you waiting? I wait for the Lord. The way that we play, or the way that we celebrate, the way we measure success for ourselves, the way in which we wait on the Lord when He seems especially silent and especially distant. I'm hoping that this psalm, I will wait for the Lord. My whole being waits for the Lord. Kind of like being under the water and I need air, I need breath to survive. I will wait on the Lord. Can you do that? Can you remain in God's place? And can you go at God's pace? And unfortunately, that going at God's pace, there isn't a clear roadmap many times. And like Abraham, we're going to make some mistakes. And like Esau, we might even make some very, very foolish mistakes. But don't forget the verse before this that says, in you, there is forgiveness. With you, there is forgiveness, so that with reverence, we can serve you. I want to close this morning with a hymn. I think it's a remake of an old hymn. The song is called, I Will Wait For You. And all I'm asking for you as we close this morning is just to listen to the words of the song. And I'm going to leave Psalm 130 up there. And maybe you can use this as your own prayer time and allow your own work week. And maybe there's something that you are waiting for. Maybe there's something that you are in the deep of some distress and you're waiting for God to reveal something to you. Maybe you can use this time to just continue to do what the psalmist did. It says, I cry to you, Lord. I'm going to cry to you, Lord. So just listen to the words of this song.
God himself has paid the price. that all who trust in him today find healing in his sacrifice. That all who trust in him today find healing in his sacrifice. I will wait for him. I will.
As you go this week, church, put your hope in the Lord is unfailing love. His full redemption. Amen.